Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Reveille, reveille, reveille!
It's a Monday edition here on Zero Block 30, and today we have three rounds of the magazine. Round number one, there was a lot of things happening in old Russia this week, and it doesn't have to do necessarily with their troops. One guy who's known as Putin's brain, his daughter, dead because she got hit by a car bomb. She was basically assassinated. And I thought, what could she have possibly said to lead to this type of thing? And then I saw some of the things that she said that led to this type of thing. Turns out she was a huge piece of shit. Now, I don't advocate for killing civilians and things like that, but there will be, and I'm a crier. I'm the Steph Curry of crying. There will be no tears shed for this woman from me, my friends. And finally, round number three, we're going to have our good friend Jason Kander. He's going to be back on the show after giving me a little pick-me-up. I had a rough weekend. The whole squad did, really. Like, every time I turn around in the ZBT chat, there's something awful. Whether it was a diaper full of unbelievable amount of shit that even went on a t-shirt, whether it was broken finger. I even saw a damn near fight on a plane, and I was ready to... We almost had a wish a motherfucker,
would.
And I would have been coming in here like the cock of the
king dingling.
If I save somebody's life, y'all gonna never hear the end of it. I swear to God about that. And all that's gonna be brought to you by our good friends at Whistle Pig. If you haven't tried it yet, have it. The whole squad was over at my mom's this weekend, sitting outside, reminiscing stories about my stepdad and things like that. I was having a little bit of Whistle Pig. I went to one place, wouldn't you know it, in a little town called Waltley, Florida. It's a small town, maybe has like 1,500 people. The little dive bar they have, zero Whistle Pig. What's that about? No, it's only like dive bar. I want to be like Jack Daniels and stuff. Like, get it out of here.
Gross.
If you go to Lottie, you expect to have some Whistle Pig. It's the good shit. Get some Whistle Pig no matter where you're at in the country. If you're up in Maine, if you're in New York, if you're in New Jersey, if you're in, hell, Kansas. Even if you're in Kansas, you can enjoy a little bit of Whistle Pig. Kansas, by the way, got shit on a lot at my mom's house this weekend. People were talking shit about Kansas. One of our friends had to move to Kansas, and everybody just poo-pooed on it. It was the most united, I think, that the entire squad was, that Kansas sucks. I had no idea why.
I feel like most people are kind of indifferent on Kansas. I don't think anyone really feels strongly, so that's kind of surprising that these people do.
Yeah, they were like, oh, it's so boring. Well, it was a lot of driving talk, too. So there's a lot. Because, you know, when the olds get together, you got some people over 40 and everybody there basically was. You start talking about that. Trips and things. People are like, oh, have you ever been from Houston to El Paso? That trip from Tallahassee to Jacksonville is just something awful.
How about when we were all growing up and you'd go to a family party, and what's the first thing people would talk about as soon as they arrived at the party? Like, oh, which way did you take? Time.
Yeah.
How fast did you get here? What roads did you take? That was like a big part of the conversation.
In my family, it's that. And then who had what removed from their skin recently?
True.
Yeah, I had another squeamal cell. That's why I got the half my family just has bandages all over their faces, all the olds. Yeah.
Cool stuff. Driving down to Florida reminded me how much of a Floridian I am. Like, it's unreal. Like, the amount of southernness that flows through my brain. I got so excited when I was driving down 301, a little highway in Florida. The amount of peanut stands there was incredible. I had boiled peanuts driving down the road. It was awesome. I wish I would have had a Whistle Pig, but not while I was driving down the road. Go to whistlepig.com, pick you out a bottle, or go to your local shop and pick you out a bottle. All right, let's get going with the show today. Kate, Cods, we'll start with you. I think broken bones takes precedence over a lot of stuff. What happened, my friend? You got a splint.
Oh, my goodness gracious. This is difficult for me because anybody who's an adult knows that hurting anything as an adult is nothing more than an inconvenience. It's not cool. It's not like when you break your arm maybe in grammar school and you come to school with a cast. It's like, oh, cool, Connor's got a cast.
You can't
number one
when you go to the office.
Exactly.
True, I will.
Exactly. So I never broke a bone, knock on wood. And Alex and I were even... What? Chatting it up on the car ride, and I was bragging about how I'd never broken a bone. We were driving back from her parents this weekend, and we were going to my uncle's for a barbecue. My uncle has a pool with a slide, and of course, there's a football there. So what do you do when you have a pool, a slide, and a football? You get on the slide, you try to catch the football. Okay. So I first
this
went
is still
I went,
a fucking America after
right.
all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is what we do. Let's right. get it, let's not get it twisted. First time I went down head first, made the catch, no problem, pulled it in. Unbelievable catch, no big deal. And then we're like, hey, do it again. We want to get it on tape. So I go down again. And surprisingly, it was more difficult than one would think to catch a football going down a fast slide. So I did it like a couple times, couldn't get the catch. Do it like a third time. My uncle throws it behind me. I reach back. And I guess maybe because the ball was wet, it kind of like nicked off my finger. And as soon as I hit the water, I go, that doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. Now, I've jammed fingers over the course of my life many, many, many times. It's not a big deal. You jam your finger playing basketball, football, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just something that happens. But I knew something was wrong right away. And what I didn't realize was having a wedding ring on definitely made it worse.
No, mm-hmm. It was your wedding ring finger? Oh, yes. Fuck. Because the x-ray. Yes, total...
Go ahead. Did you have Lynn Swan hand?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Yeah.
So at first I'm like, it didn't feel right. But then I get out of the pool and everyone, you know, as soon as you get injured, everybody becomes a doctor right away, right? Like, oh, it's this, it's that.
I know
it's
what a broken leg looks like. That is not broken.
Yeah, exactly.
Get up.
Oh,
no,
if it was broken, yeah. So my sister texts her one friend who's a doctor. I text a buddy who's a doctor. Neither of them got back to us, unfortunately. So I'm sitting there and I'm just staring at my finger getting bigger and bigger. And I'm like, there's no way having this ring on is making this better. And I'm trying to get it off. I went inside, used some soap, tried to get it off. That's not working because my finger is just a huge freaking lump at the knuckle. So finally I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, I actually got to go to the hospital. And I'm not a, hey, let's go to the hospital guy.
Yeah.
I'm very much.
Same.
It's
my
fine.
Last resort, especially yeah. on the weekend.
Absolutely. We were having a great time at this barbecue, all this great food, unbelievable weather. I dunked my hand in a cup of ice. So I was icing it. I'm like, it'll be fine. Whatever. For whatever reason, it wasn't right. So we go to the hospital. First thing, the dude who's like checking people in at the ER, we walk in and he says, hope you don't like that ring. That's probably coming off.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, my guy, I've been married for, I don't know, like 6 months now. Like, that's not what I want to hear. Like, I actually like the ring. I don't.
So did they have to cut it off?
No. So long story short, I'm sitting in the weight room. I have an ice pack on my hand. Luckily, I wasn't supposed to be next, but a doctor happened to be coming back. The doctor on call, he's like, hey, what's going on with you, man? And I remove the ice pack and he sees my finger all jacked up with the ring. He's like, oh, we got to get that off right now. Mm-hmm. So he brings me in the back. Have you guys ever seen the string method to get mm-hmm. a ring off?
Yeah.
They found a shoelace somewhere in the ER. And I will
probably
admit,
in a shoe.
Yes.
Oh, they compress your finger down and then they pull it
yeah.
up. Yeah.
But I will say, I'm going to put my, you know, hardo hat off for a second here. It hurt like hell because it was all swollen and they were like really pushing down on it and yanking it. And
well, because in the x-ray, the entire top of your finger is just completely detached. I almost yes. vomited when I saw the x-ray. The whole yes. top from your knuckle up is just no longer attached to your hand. So yeah,
yes.
that would hurt.
So
that would hurt a little bit. Yeah.
They get the ring off, thank God. So I didn't have to cut my wedding ring off. Then the guy comes in. By the way, did you guys know there's X-ray machines that are just on wheels now and they can just move them all around? Mm-hmm. I haven't been in an emergency
room.
You can
buy one on Amazon for like $150.
Didn't know that either. But I haven't
been.
Were
you telling them? Were you like, it's a good thing I didn't have my West Point football ring on? If I mentioned that, I played football at. So.
Honest to God, I was just thinking this story of recap is longer, like by about 5 minutes, than his entire 2 week or 3 week trip to Italy.
Yeah. yeah. But yeah, no. So they wheel in the x-ray and then I'm like, whoa, that's definitely dislocated. I've never dislocated a finger before. So that was weird.
Yeah.
So then the doc, who was a complete pro, numbed me up. He's like, all right, I'm gonna put it back in. And I heard a little pop. It went right back in. I was able to make a fist. Now it's all swollen. But again, as an adult, you don't want to have to wear one of these, you know, damn splints because it's just a hindrance and an annoyance.
Yeah.
And also,
you know
what
you should honestly do?
This.
What? Because you're going to get asked whenever you're an adult, when you have an injury, what's asked? I would do like a little note, an Apple note, and just carry printouts in your wallet and be like, here you go.
Right.
This is what happened.
You're right. Yeah. This is what happened. Thank you. So the last thing I'll say is I said this to Alex and she wasn't happy about this. I just said, you know what? I got to be a better athlete and just make the catch. And then we're not sitting in the CR right now for 3 hours. And
no excuse. Play like a Sunday champion. Night. Rule number 78. Exactly.
Friendly reminder. My favorite dislocation story ever is rugby urban legend was the guy whose leg got dislocated on the field and his buddies were like, we can pop it back in. So they went to pop it back in, but they didn't realize that his ball was in the crevice. So when they popped his leg back in, his ball got stuck inside his groin. Crack.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Different
I
type of cum true. Gutter, my friend.
Different type of cum gutter. I don't know if that's true, but I think about that a lot. No, think about
that. That was my Sunday night. A lot of fun going in the ER for 3 hours.
Mine was a little Game of Thrones action Sunday night, and I'd be remiss if I didn't bring this up because I thought about it right away. One, dragons must stink to fucking high hell. I don't know if you guys watched the show last night or not, but they. Mm-hmm. There's one woman who's apparently going to be the heir to the new throne or whatever, the Iron Throne. She rides dragons for a living and just likes to go out and wants to be a warrior on a dragon. But every time she comes back from riding a dragon, people are like, ooh, I could tell you've been on the dragon. Dragons must smell like absolute badussy. Like just
it's
straight up
like
badussy.
A campfire BO smells the way I picture it. Did you see the video last night of it was an apartment building in New York City.
Yes.
And someone took a video from the street and every single different apartment was flashing the same colors at the same time because everyone in the building was watching Game of Thrones at the same time.
And my military brain popped in when I was watching it, Kate. As soon as this new guy who's the Lee Targaryen, who's like the House of the Dragon, he's the king right now. He sits on the Iron Throne, the same one that they had in the old Game of Thrones. So you know what it looks like with the big old swords and shit coming out. Mm-hmm. Well, old boy, apparently in the new the old show Game of Thrones, which is after this new season, they must have brought out their little longtime Thule grinders and were grinding down all the swords because this fella keeps getting cut by the throne, the Iron Throne made from swords. He got tetanus on his back. They're having to cauterize that. He sits down and get another cut. I think they're doing a little premonition that he's going to die by tetanus. Look, you need a fucking company gunny. You need something like that to be like, hey, sir, you're getting fucking tetanus. We need to have a little operational risk management in here. Get this old throne out of here and get one in here that's going to be proper. We can't have who's going to be leading us in battle getting fucking tetanus. What?
Can I ask a question? Because I don't watch the show. Did they actually call it tetanus? Or they call
no,
it
they don't
else?
Know what it is. And they're just very confused why he won't heal. It's because he has tetanus. Yeah.
Ah, see, I never watched. I didn't have HBO during the quarantine when everybody was watching Game of Thrones and stuff. But the corner gay bar had, they would do drag reenactments.
I remember that.
Or I guess it was before COVID. They would do drag reenactments of whatever that episode was.
Out of the park, right?
Yeah, I would just go there and I'd be like, well, I guess it was a sexy episode again. I guess everyone was doing splits again.
Well, it is true. Well, one fella gets his dick straight cut off in this show. And they put it on a stump, which you have to see that and go watch it there. Anyways, let's talk about a danger that's more intense than even tetanus.
Wait,
that's a car bomb. What?
Wait.
We're going to do it at the end of the show. We're going to do it at the end of the show.
I got to hear what happened to Kate.
No, we're going to do that at the end of the show.
Oh, okay. All right.
We're going to do that. We're going to get into the actual topic so we're not talking for 45 minutes before we talk. We'll do that at the end of the show. All right. So let's get going with the actual first round of the show. This one was taken so depending on who I was looking at, like their Twitter accounts and what I know them for, when I follow them and getting different information and things like that, some of the folks who are big time intelligence heads and that's all they do is work with intel, they're saying that this killing is a huge, huge deal. And that if Russia can confirm that Ukrainians were involved in a big time way, then they are worried that there's going to be even more strikes that are going to happen into like civilian areas because they're saying now this opens it up. Like Russia hasn't killed tens of thousands of civilians already. Like they were going to do anything different.
Either way, what's to stop Russia from just saying that anyway, no matter who this was? Using it to justify
Russia.
More.
Yeah.
Right. Classic Russia. Classic. I saw this video when I was scrolling Twitter last night and it is it's a father standing there watching a car on fire across the street that has his daughter in it. And then you read about it and you're like, oh my God, this is terrible. And then you read about it and you're like, yeah. Anyway, Russia
it's a weird range of emotions because you read the
catch of emotions
and you see the father watching and you're like, oh, I kind of feel bad. And then you read who it is and you're like, I feel less bad. And then by the time you really get into who this guy is and what his family is about, you're like, I don't really feel bad at all.
But yeah, so Russia has accused Ukrainian special services of killing the daughter of one of Vladimir Putin's allies and basically one of his right hand men, like one of the people who pretty much is his brain, they're saying. Journalist Daria, I'm going to say Dugina, that's probably wrong, age 29, died on Saturday when a car she was driving exploded near Moscow. Her father, Alexander Dugin, a prominent ultra-nationalist thought to be close to the Russian president, may have been the intended target. Russia's Federal Security Service, the FSB, now says it has solved the case and that Ukraine is directly responsible. Ukrainian officials have already denied any involvement, but in a statement carried by Russian media outlets, the FSB contends that the Ukrainian special services hired a contractor who arrived in Russia in mid-July with her young daughter. It alleges she rented an apartment in the same building as Ms. Dugin to learn about her life. The security agency also said the suspects used a Mini Cooper car, which used three different sets of license plates.
All right. So when I first read that, it reminds me of a plot of like Born Identity or Born Supremacy or whatever. Like that's exactly what it sounds like. Mini Cooper's involved, moving in. This sounds like the beginning of a made for Netflix type of movie.
Bringing your kid with you so no one suspects anything.
Exactly right. So it's setting up like it's a TV show, essentially, and one that I would definitely watch.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The suspect escaped to Estonia after the explosion, the FSB said. Miss Dugina? And her father.
So what it is there, this is, I actually failed Russian in college, but here it's the dude is going to be Dugin and A will be added to the daughter of. So okay. You'll have the masculine name and then an A is at the end to show that it's the daughter of.
Okay. Huh. Well, Miss Dugina and her father were at a festival near Moscow on Saturday evening where Mr. Dugin, a philosopher, gave a lecture. They had reportedly planned to leave in the same car, but changed plans at the last minute. Investigators said an explosive had been planted underneath the Toyota Land Cruiser that Ms. Dugina was driving, which set it ablaze after detonation and killed her. Video from the scene posted online appeared to show a shaken Mr. Dugin watching emergency services attend to the burning vehicle. And he's standing there with his hands on his head. He knows it's too late. The car is just a ball of fire. And he's just standing there, like just looking like he's in shock. Dugina, I'm 12 years old.
Dugina
was a vocal supporter of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. She had been placed under sanctions by the UK in July as a frequent and high profile contributor of disinformation in relation to Ukraine.
And see, this is from Reuters, by the way. This reporting is all from Reuters and a little bit of the AP as well. This story fucking pisses me off, man, because the amount of almost both sidiness that Reuters is doing here is ridiculous. She was a vocal supporter of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. That's a really, really, really nice way to say that she has called for genocide multiple times. She has said that every man, woman, and child should be eradicated from Ukraine. This isn't somebody who's just a vocal supporter of a war. This is somebody who is pro-genocide and is doing things, working the media, working different political areas, basically the Russian equivalent of lobbying. She's doing all these things to get Ukrainians eradicated from the earth. This is not just a vocal supporter. This is a terrible person.
Her and her dad were like the Alex Joneses of Russia, which I think there's a
bunch of them. Influence, like with much more influence, like that kind of crazy ultra authoritarian type of personality, but with much more interest, because some people say that he's Putin's brain. Others are saying that it's like Putin's Rasputin, that not only is he involved with Putin, but he's the one who really teaches Putin about philosophy and how they're going to go after this. He's the one who has said for years that he wants to go in and invade all these former USSR countries and bring them back into the fold. And that it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And Putin he's had Putin's ear for a long time.
Well, her father, Alexander, is known as Putin's brain. He has long expressed an anti-Western ultra-nationalist philosophy that has made him a significant figure in Moscow, despite not holding a political office. Seen as the founder of Russia's anti-European movement, he told the BBC in 2014 that war with Ukraine is inevitable and had long called for the annexation of Crimea, something that happened that year. He's 60 years old. He's long advocated for the unification of Russian-speaking territories and a vast new Russian empire, which obviously he wants them to take over Ukraine. In his 97 book, The Geopolitical Future of Russia, He fiercely criticized U.S. influence in Eurasia and called for Russia to rebuild its own authority in the region and advocated for breaking up the territory of other nations. He has direct influence on Russian foreign policy. His influence over Putin has been a subject of speculation. Many Russia watchers assert that his sway is significant, but he has no official ties to the Kremlin. The U.S. imposed sanctions on him in 2015 for being responsible for actions that threaten peace. He wrote that a new eternal, true and profound Russia needs to be established for the to attract the people of Ukraine. And basically, yeah, him and his whole family, not great.
They're just enormous pieces of shit, essentially. So if you've seen that news, I imagine this is going to be a turning point of some sort.
But
go ahead.
Hear me out. I wouldn't put it past, like, because I've listened to a bunch of podcasts and read up on this, like, Putin bombed several apartment buildings in his own country to start a war with another country before Ukraine, way back when he first started out. Like, he's not above killing his own people. No. I don't think he's above killing his buddy's kids. I don't think he's above taking anyone. This is tinfoil hat, Katie. But like,
you think Putin's behind this?
I think she's could be spot on there,
because they're struggling in Ukraine. Things are like not going well for them, and they need something to get people to rally behind and
radicalize
really
your base, basically.
Radicalize your base. Like, so I wouldn't put it past Ukraine or an enemy of Russia to do this, but I also wouldn't put it past Russia to do this.
And it's also just a little too coincidental that he happened to leave and not go into the car that he was going to ride in. I mean, how often, if you're that level of person, you don't change your spot in a car, right? Like, people adjust for you. If you're that level of person, I mean, if we're riding somewhere with the governor, it's not going to be like, hey, ZBT is actually going to hop in. Mr. Governor or Mrs. Governor, can you fucking step out for a second? Like, that's not the way it's going to work. This dude had a lot of influence and he's the one switching cars. I think that they probably could have targeted him both, because you're right, Kate. There's been generals that have been targeted. There's been colonels that have been targeted that haven't done well, all in an effort to kind of swirl everybody up and get everybody all wrapped around the axle.
Yeah, I feel like you never know what the truth is with when shit happens in Russia. It's like just a
I don't think I've ever asked you guys this. What do you think about the old cut off the head of the snake? If Putin was eliminated, do you think that would reinvigorate his base, or would it ultimately lead to everything calming back down?
I think it could go either way. I think that's the danger of it.
Two schools of thought. Yeah,
there basically is two schools of thought. And we've seen it, right? Like, we've seen it with Saddam. That was the big fear with Saddam, that Uday Hussein was going to take over after Saddam was assassinated, and then he would be even more crazy than Saddam. Well, it turns out he's dead too. But yeah. I understand what you're saying. With Putin, you never know, because I don't know if he's the type of guy that's going to keep people at bay, but I don't know. I have no idea. Dangerous, though, especially when the country has the most nuclear weapons of anyone on Earth.
Yeah, not good. Not great.
Tread lightly.
Just curious to see more coming out about that, because it's buzzing on social media right now. People are speculating all kinds of things, and I'm here for it.
Go to rockyourboots.com. I enter the promo code ZBT, and I get 25% off the best boots in the business, whether I'm going out hiking or hunting or doing whatever I want to do. A lot of my family members, they all work like blue collar jobs and do it out. They've been wearing Rocky boots. They say that they use the promo code. And I was like, well, just let me know. Maybe I can hook you up or something like that. But they don't want to do that. They're still paying because they're good boots and they enjoy them. They are Rocky boots. Make sure to go to rockyboots.com and the promo code ZBT. And hopefully soon we'll be doing a little goofing ourselves, because I'm getting really involved with the patrol base Abate. I know I've talked to Kate and Cons about it too. We're all looking forward to doing an event, and we're going to be wearing some Rocky boots when we go on those hikes as well. You should too. Rockyboots.com, promo code ZBT. Let's get going with round number three, which is my interview with Jason Kander. Here's Jason. Now on Zero Block 30, I'm privileged to have Jason Kander. Jason and I have known each other for a while. He's been on the show before. He's doing all kinds of stuff around the globe. He's helping veterans out here and there and everywhere. He just released a new book a couple weeks ago, and it's called Invisible Storm, a soldier's memoir of politics and PTSD. We're going to get into all of that in the book. But Jason, I want to start off with one of the things that I follow you and that I love the fact that you do it. I don't think we've talked about it on this show quite enough. I want to start off with your villages and your areas that you're building for different, and the organization that you work with is building for veterans who are experiencing
homelessness. Can we start there and talk about some, I need some positivity in my fucking life right now, Jason. I got to be honest. And that's positive. What do we got there?
Absolutely, man. I love talking about Veterans Community Project. I appreciate the question. Let me tell you my story of how I got involved, and then I'll tell you about what the place does. Well, let's start with what the place does. Veterans Community Project was founded in Kansas City by a group of combat veterans who looked at veterans' benefits and said, you know what? We can fill in some of these gaps. So it started with, hey, there's a lot of folks who aren't eligible for the VA, or they're not eligible for everything the VA does, or they're falling through the cracks of the system one way or the other. So they created a walk-in operation that I refer to as working on the Jumbotron model, which is to say that thing where you're at a ball game and they put a vet on the Jumbotron and everybody applauds. And then there's that feeling that sweeps over everybody. Like, it feels like there's something else I can do other than just stand here and applaud. And VCP, Veterans Community Project, became in Kansas City, when it was started 6 years ago, the answer to what else can I do? And it became the place where whatever it is you do, no matter who you are, veteran or otherwise, you can come and you can serve veterans at this place. And it allowed folks to come in, whether they were VA eligible, not VA eligible, waiting on the VA, whatever, and to get connected with every kind of service you can imagine really quickly by people who provide it in the community. And that's not even the thing that's best known for. What it's best known for is what you just mentioned, which is what we do on veteran homelessness, which is kind of an unprecedented revolutionary model, which is to build villages of tiny houses that in a lot of ways replicate active duty housing, right? I mean, everything's in one place, the place where you get all your
including
services.
The mold, right? You guys pump in the extra mold in there. Well, we make everybody feel really at home.
We take a really, really unique approach of not having mold.
Wow. I didn't even know you're allowed to do that.
Yeah. So I guess it's not a completely authentic experience as far as that goes.
Right.
But we build these villages and we have comprehensive wraparound case management services that go with them. And we have an 85%, unprecedented 85% success rate of getting folks from homelessness into eventually being permanently housed successfully. Wow. And so it's a really inspiring program. The way I got involved is back in 2018, you know, after I had, you know, flirted pretty heavily with running for president, I decided, you know, I'm kind of messed up, but I wouldn't admit to myself exactly how. And then I said, well, I'm going to go home. I'm going to run for mayor of Kansas City. And I'm going to go to the VA. So I did half that. I started running for mayor. That was going well from a campaign perspective. I didn't do the other half, going to the VA. So I was not going well. And I just kept spiraling. And then the one good day I had during that campaign was, even though campaign was going well, I wasn't. So the good day I had was I toured Veterans Community Project. I was really inspired by it. It was like a FOB in Afghanistan had a baby with a Silicon Valley startup. Like, it was like really innovative, but there was really dark humor.
Probably looks like what that viral video of Poland barracks went a couple days ago. Right. People were complaining and most older veterans were like, what the fuck are you talking about? That looks awesome. Like, I would love to move there.
It was just like, you know, the place is like, you know, people love you because they're like just a little bit mean, mm-hmm. You know, and so, but really innovative. So I really liked it. But I was like, I'm not going to quit what I'm doing. This is what I do for a living. 6 weeks later, I'm in the suicide hold at the emergency department at the VA. And they're telling me it's probably going to be 4 or 5 months before you can get enrolled to come to weekly therapy. So I call VCP and I'm like, what do? I'm about to announce this tomorrow. And they say, come on down. So I go through the outreach center, like thousands of other Kansas City vets. A week later, they've expedited my paperwork and I'm in weekly therapy at the VA. At that time, communities around the country were reaching out to Veterans Community Project and saying, can you do this in our community? And they were kind of trying to figure that out. But I had built a national organization before. So after a few months of therapy, I came on as president of National Expansion. And now we're building these campuses around the country. And it's the best civilian job I've ever had.
And it's really motivating other people that are in politics and other people that are in this. I was at a veteran town hall with Beto O'Rourke here in Texas a few weeks ago, and he was talking about using some of those same principles here. And he even mentioned to me that he thinks with some of those principles and some of the ways that you guys have done things and what he's observed and what his team has observed, that they think that they could end, they say it's one of their campaign goals to end homeless veteran in Texas. Which is a substantial undertaking. And that only happens, that only pie in the sky idea happens with smaller organizations, not smaller organizations, but starting small and then building out a bigger program. And we're seeing that it's working in different areas across the country. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of hope for in places here like Texas and California that can get on board and do that type of thing. I do think it's remarkable that while you're one, just the idea of somebody running for president or flirting with it seriously is such, in my mind, it's like, how do you get to that point? Like, if I told my parents or if I told my spouse or anybody, hey, I'm thinking about running for a high level job, they'd be like, who the fuck are you? So how do you get to that level of confidence in yourself and the confidence in those that are around you and the people that you are able to put around you that you are, that you think that you could do this job? How do you get to that point?
That's kind of a unique thing about my experience, I guess, is that, I had these two things happening simultaneously for me, which is my self-confidence never flagged. And that, you know, I credit that, I guess, to, you know, the way my parents raised me. Like I, all the way till the day that I said, I don't think I'm going to run for president, or all the way to the day, like shit to now, you know, I'm like, there's no part of me that's not like, I'm incredibly talented at this. I could do this. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, before I got treatment, there was this other part of me, not the self-confidence part, but the self-esteem part, mm-hmm. that, you know, as related to PTSD, I didn't know this then, but I just thought I was an irredeemable piece of shit as a human. So I was like, I know that I'm an incredibly talented politician, but I also was like, but I'm kind of a piece of shit. Yeah. And so I was
and
like,
now you used to be a piece of shit. You're on the path to recovery.
Well, now I'm like, I used to think I was a piece of shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. And, but what I was doing for a lot of those years, the 10 years that I was running for office and suffering from undiagnosed, untreated, unknown to me PTSD, was I was trying to use the self-confidence as like a salve to the self-esteem. So, you know, when I would give a big speech or I'd go on TV and do a big interview and people would say nice things, to me, that was like, oh, I can use this to try and rebut the other part of me that's telling me I suck. But it was only minimally effective. And eventually it didn't work at all.
Do you think it was a lot of imposter syndrome? Because a lot of the veterans that I talk to, when you're there and you're doing these good things and you are capable and you're doing them and you could see the fruit of the labors that you're putting out, a lot of times I've noticed that veterans can feel like, even though I'm doing this, I don't feel like it's me that's doing this. I'm not worthy to be doing this. I am not able to do this type of thing. I'm just faking the funk and somebody's going to eventually catch me. Did you struggle with that mental aspect as well?
I did, in terms of how I saw myself as a soldier and then as a veteran, because one of the things that the military does, and I don't fault them for this, is I refer to it as a necessary form of brainwashing, right? Which is, they tell us from the word go, from the moment you sign up, they tell us what you're doing is no big deal. Like, mm-hmm. other people have had it so much worse. Other people do have it so much worse. And that's important, right? Because for you to do your job, you had to believe that it wasn't that big a deal, or you couldn't keep doing it, right? For me to keep going into meetings where I could get my head cut off as an intelligence officer with, you know, nobody really knowing where I was, so no backup. Like, I had to be like, well, other people are out there on patrol, right? Like I had to believe that. The problem mm-hmm. is, when we get out, nobody flips that switch off. Nobody sits us down and goes, okay, now that that's over, you should know that was actually a pretty big deal. Like, that was some serious yeah. shit, and you probably are going to need some help. So instead, what happens is, it gets, I think a lot of people think that veterans are like, we just think we're so tough and manly that we think it's weak to go get help. I actually think at this point, there aren't that many veterans left who think getting therapy is a sign of weakness.
I agree with that.
Yeah, it's really not pervasive that way anymore. I think now it's much more like, it's two things. It's one, well, I have it on very good authority that what I did was no big deal. So how could I have PTSD at mm-hmm. stolen valor if I go in and claim it, you know, when what I did is no big deal, no matter who you are, you think that. And then the other problem is, we haven't gotten it across really that therapy works, mm-hmm. right? So like, I think I spent a lot of years looking at PTSD as like a terminal diagnosis, because I was like, either it's going to cause me to kill myself if I have it, or at best case scenario, it's just going to kill my career. So I was like, why would I go get that diagnosis? And so a big part of why I wrote this book, my proceeds of which, by the way, benefit Veterans Community Project, 100% of my royalties. But the big reason I wrote the book is because I want more people to know that actually it works. Like, if you commit to the program, you get better and you can achieve post-traumatic growth and you don't have to feel this way.
And there was a comment that Secretary Mattis, General Mattis, made almost in that same vein. And I remember hearing it maybe 6 or 7 years ago for the first time when he talked about this concept of post-traumatic growth. And I think that the way that Mattis framed it, the intentions were good, but the way that he put it out there was a little bit off. One, I think that post-traumatic growth can absolutely happen in a position like yours. When you see the diagnosis, you understand the diagnosis, you work through some of this trauma, and then you come out with a better understanding, with better coping skills and how to move forward in your life with that new freedom that you achieve through therapy. Once that happens, then post-traumatic growth happens. And I can see different veterans who have gone through that process coming out stronger and are able to help folks that are on that downslide, reaching out your hand and say, hey, I did this, you could do this too. And I think because the VA, you'll have permanent and total disability categories, and one of those can be PTSD. So when you hear that there's no treatment, I feel like that's a big barrier for a lot of veterans to even go get this help, because they're like, I'm doing fine. I've got my job. Sure, I'm boozing a little bit too much, but I'm ultimately doing okay. When in reality, their okay is bad, and they could be doing so much better than they even realize.
That's exactly right. And the other thing that a lot of people don't know, and that I didn't know, and why it took me so long to go get treatment, it took me over a decade, is that I was like, well, I'm getting by. Oh, I'm doing this, you know, and this is making it okay. But what you don't realize, because it happens gradually, usually, is you're actually getting worse and worse and worse. And you feel like, well, you know, it's been a while now. It's been a long time since I was deployed. It's, you know, and in your mind, you're like, I just need to get more distance from it. And what you don't know is that ain't how trauma works. Like, it's not like wine. Like, it doesn't age well. It's the opposite, you know, and you're either going to deal with it or it's going to deal with you. And then the other piece of this that I see often, and that I know looking back is something that I did, is that we think that the way to feel better, we don't usually have the lexicon, the vocabulary of post-traumatic growth at that time, but the way we think that we'll get there is through redemption, that we're going to go do something. Maybe it's in our civilian life, maybe we're still in the military, we're going to go do something so great that it's going to provide us some kind of closure, and that we're going to finally, but that ain't how it works. And I think the reason that we feel that way is because the movies that we grew up on, that are the movies that got a lot of us to join the military in the first place, that's the myth that narrates all those movies. Like, I use the Top Gun movies as an example, right? Like, they're great movies. Like, I'll go see Maverick again in the theaters, right? But like, in the first movie, like, Goose dies and Viper comes in and tells him Goose died, and then goes, you got to get past it. And a week later, he kills two bad guys over the Indian Ocean, and then he throws Goose's dog tags off the deck, and he gets the girl, and he's good to go. And that's what we
grew up
learning.
And then 30 years later, his career is fucked. He hasn't got promoted. Right. He's still battling exactly all those demons. Like, all the Top Gun 2 is the perfect example. Like, you can be this high-level pilot. You could still perform decently well. Are you Maverick? Are you what Maverick's potential could have been? Probably not. Did you still do well? Yeah, you're a Navy captain. That's an 06. That's pretty good. But you're not what you could have been.
And you're not happy.
Yeah.
You know, you're not in, you are living your life, but not participating in your life. You're there kind of watching yourself do those things. And you're not able to be present in the moment, to borrow a line from the movie, unless you're going mock whatever with your hair on fire. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was doing. I was like, the only times I felt present was when I was, you know, giving a major speech on national television or, you know, in some high stakes moment, right?
That's that adrenaline rush, right?
Exactly. I was chasing that. I didn't know it. But then when I was with my family, I couldn't feel present, right? And then I felt shame about that. And that made me kind of hate myself, right? And so what I now understand is, like, I still have adrenaline moments. It's fun. But like, I don't need them. I'm not addicted to them in the same way that I was. And I can be present with my family. And that's post-traumatic growth. And the only way I think you get there is through treatment.
So when you're going through all of these different things, and you're giving these big speeches and then going home and realizing that you're maybe not the person that you want to be at home, did you have anybody in your life that was calling those things to your attention? Because I think a lot of times when people hear a story about yours, somebody who's successful and you've done, like, you've checked the marks of when you get out, like, of things that would be considered successful. When you're doing those things, I think it's harder for other people who are in your orbit to be like, hey, you've got some serious issues. Did you have anybody that was brave enough to tell you those types of things?
A little bit. So my wife, you know, was like, ended up with secondary post-traumatic stress just from living with me. And so that's a treat. We're recording this on our 19th anniversary. So that was an anniversary gift that I gave her for several years. And so we knew something was wrong with me, but you know, we got together when we were 17. We were married when I deployed, like we were kids. Like we didn't know what this was or how to treat it. So we went through it together. But then I did have other people in my life. I had somebody who had gotten their own kind of treatment, who I was really close to, who I was able to at least see them get better. And that gave me hope, and it gave me the feeling that I could. But in large part, the answer to your question is no, because like a lot of vets, you know, I returned to life, to civilian life, and I was surrounded, you know, 99% of the people I was around had never been in the military, let alone deployed. And because I had this career in politics, I had created a lot of distance, not on purpose, between me and the people that I was really close to before I got into politics. So my whole orbit were people I knew through politics. So for instance, when I was Secretary of State in Missouri, like my staff, they all knew me well past my deployment. So like, you know, to them, it was like, well, the boss doesn't like it when people sit behind him in a meeting. Like, they weren't like, maybe he has like, how would they know? Right. They're just like, oh, he didn't like that. Right. Mm-hmm. And so there were very limited opportunities for people to draw my attention to that sort of thing. Plus I was like, so convinced that it couldn't be the case because like so many people, I was just, you know, talking down my own experience to myself that like, even if they were saying it to me, I wasn't hearing it.
And there's a ton of masking that happens, whether intentionally or not. And I think more often than not, we have no idea that we're even masking. And it doesn't come through until therapy that you realize, oh, shit. Yeah, and it's not even something that you realize, like sitting in the back and making sure that you know all your neighbors and not maybe I don't want to buy this house that fits everything, but I have somebody directly behind me that I won't be able to see him all the time. It's those little things that stick into your mind that you don't really realize until somebody is like, hey, dummy, look, like this is what's going on with you.
Well, and it's like that stuff, which I now know is hypervigilance, right?
But right.
I didn't have that term then, because the way I thought about it then was, I understand the world is a dangerous place and the rest of these people are idiots. Like, you know, so like,
keep your head in the sand, sheep. I know what I need to be doing at Arby's. I know.
Exactly. Like, how are you supposed to know that what's wrong with you is wrong with you when you're convinced that it's just something wrong with everybody else?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I don't know what you do. I guess what you do is stop eventually and go get some treatment and write a book about it. So
yeah, that's my prescription.
When you're doing all of that and you're in the midst of this, running for mayor, getting all these things going, doing great in your organization, how do you stop and put the brakes on? Because I think that's one of the most different aspects of your story, is that you essentially had a personal operational pause for all the different things that you were doing. Can you describe what that process was like and the support processes that were around you while you were attempting to do this?
Yeah. Let me start with kind of how it came about for me. And that is that, so I had been going real hard ever since I got home from Afghanistan in 07 and I started running for office a few months later. So I was going hard for a decade, right? And I was basically outrunning myself, right? I was like, as long as I'm going, I feel okay. You know, the intrusive thoughts aren't there, other than at night in your subconscious, like then it's all night terrors. But I'm like, okay, I'm handling it. And then I'm like at the level where I'm getting ready to run for president. I'm doing 46 states in a year. I'm giving these speeches and all that's going really well. But gradually I'm getting more and more exhausted emotionally. Also, literally, like the nightmares were getting worse. I wasn't sleeping. And that was making me pretty depressed. Right. And so then I realized, like, if I can piece together these endorphin high moments, then I'm getting by. Right. So like I give a big speech, I give a big interview, and it got to the point where I was in New Hampshire and I gave this huge keynote address in New Hampshire. That was like this guy's going to run for president keynote. Like the year before me, it was Joe Biden. And the year before that, it was Hillary Clinton. And then this year it was me. It was that kind of moment. And I nail it. Like, you know, I knew when I did well and I knew when I didn't, and I crushed this speech. And that kind of a high would usually last me days, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But like 12 hours later, I just felt empty and numb again. And that was the first time that I was like, okay, something's wrong. Like something I really is wrong. And shortly after that, I decided, well, I'm going to run for mayor. And my thinking, instead of president, and my thinking was, one, the VA thing, I'd go there. But two, it was, well, if I could see the changes, again, going back to the redemption thing, if I can do it in my hometown where like my kids are sixth generation Missourians and sixth generation Kansas Cityans, it's like, if I can see a difference I make in my hometown, that's going to fill me up. That's going to make, but that obviously didn't work. And then all of a sudden I started getting worse faster. Like I had been getting worse for a while, but now I'm getting worse faster. And I started to get scared because even though I'm running this runaway successful campaign for mayor, I'm thinking more and more about suicide. And it gets to the point where I'm like, I wasn't sure what to do. So I called the VA crisis line, and it was the sound of the woman's voice on the other end of the phone where I realized I didn't sound any different than anybody else that she had talked to. And that precluded me from continuing to see myself as different from other vets. And that's when I was like, oh, I can't go any further. I've got to get help.
And it must have been a point that was drastically bad for you, obviously, if you're feeling suicidal. But from people that I've talked to and other veterans I know, a lot of times we are very aware of those types of hotlines, the veteran help hotline, military one source, all those different things that are shoved down our throats ad nauseum when we're in. But a lot of times we can almost adapt this perspective that that's for them and not for me. Yep. And to get to that point where you're the one dialing, it must have been a really, really bad moment for somebody in your position with your level of success to be like, I need to dial this number, because you had resources at your disposal. I assume that running for president, your income was enough for if you needed to, you could pay out of pocket and all those different things. What led you? How dark was the spot for you to actually pick up the number and hit 1-888 to start it out?
It was dark. And particularly what it was for me that was unique about it was I didn't know what I needed. Like I didn't know. I was still telling myself I can't have PTSD. Like I didn't do enough. I mean, you know, like I had this, looking back, I understand that going out and meeting with people who might be luring you into a trap and doing that over and over again to potentially kidnap you. I understand that's combat now. It's explained to me at the VA, but I never fired my weapon. Yeah. And like, you know, never fired my weapon over there. So I went almost 11 years going, I am not a combat veteran. Like that's what I'm telling myself the whole time. And so I was like, I don't know what's wrong with me. So for me, it was like, I don't even know who to go see in the private sector. And so I was like, well, and I had filled out VA paperwork before, but I had soft-pedaled my answers because I was afraid, what if they ever become public, right? So, which was wrong of me, but that normal. Was the stigma. Yeah. And so finally, I just ran out of ideas. And I was like, well, if I call this number, I was sheepish about it. Like, I thought that I was going to call this number and be told, like, hey, there are people who really need, keep this channel clear, you know? And that's what I thought. But so then when
would you be so fucked up if they did that?
It would be really fucked up. But that's like what I thought. Yeah. Man. And so then when one of her first questions was, have you, you know, had thoughts about hurting yourself? The only person I'd ever said it out loud to was my wife. And so I answered honestly, and like, I got really emotional just from the experience of saying that out loud. And then it was just the way she talked to me. I immediately understood, like, oh, I sound like everyone else who's called. It's not for them. It's for me. And then honestly, after that, I went and I Googled PTSD, which I had done many times to prove to myself I didn't have it, and like tried to find some little hole I could poke in it, you know, but now it had kind of opened my mind to it. And I read it, and it was like someone had written it about me. Mm-hmm. And that's when I was like, well, I just knew, I was like, I've come to the end of the line here. Like, I didn't want to die. And also at that point, I had lost the motivation to go fake the funk. Like, I didn't want to put the Jason Kander suit on the next day and go to an event and pretend everything was great. I was just like, I just want to go find out if I can get better.
Yeah. And I think that that's a message that really strikes a chord with a lot of people. I mean, for me, whenever I got shot and I came back, I had those same type
of thoughts that you did. Like, I got shot because I made a tactical mistake. I should have low crawled in this area where I didn't. Or one of my buddies lost an arm. One of my buddies lost a leg. One of my buddies lost their life. And I talk on this show all the time about letting perfect be the enemy of good. Mm-hmm. And I think we do that with mental health treatment too. Like, you almost feel like the average veteran feels like you have to have the most perfect diagnosis of PTSD. You had to have been shot, maybe lose a leg, maybe be in a rollover that hit an IED. Because if you're not in that perfect scenario, you don't rate your mental trauma. And that comes from years of poisonous leadership in the military when the wars really started, of how we were going to go about this, what false ideas about what masculinity is and all those different things coupled together. And it wasn't until after I got arrested that I was like, I really have to look into what's going on here. And I had the same exact type of career that you did, where I felt like I was one of the best Marines around and I didn't want to disappoint all those other people. They knew, because I got arrested, there was no hiding it. There was some shit that was going on deep inside my brain and I had to get it. And I'm more glad when people get to the spot where you're not in fucking handcuffs or you're not in a jail cell or you're not doing these types of, if you can recognize that you need help before that moment, you're doing pretty fucking good. And Jason, you did a good thing recognizing, even running for president, running for mayor, doing all these things. People in the media know you. You're schmoozing with all kinds of people and still being like, I have to do this for myself. I think it's a great example for other veterans.
Oh, thanks, man. And what I try and get across to people is that, you know, the military teaches us to rank and rate everything, right? Uh-huh. Like, that's the whole thing is built around that. So
including
then
medicine, what level of smiley face are you?
Exactly. Like, right. Like, are you red, yellow, or green when you put your CAC card in the system, right? On mm-hmm. your freaking molars, like all of it. And so we, we come out and we think we can rank our trauma out of existence. We think we can go, yeah, okay, this happened to me, but the guy next to me, this happened. And I would say that's, you know, to borrow an example you were alluding to, that's like if you fell and broke your arm, but you were standing next to a person with no arm, you wouldn't be like, well, obviously I'll walk this off, right? Right. You know, and if you did that, though, your arm would be mangled after.
And
a
the
few
dude
years.
With no arm isn't looking at you and being like, what a puss.
Yeah. He's like, can I drive you to
broke,
the hospital?
Dude. Go
like,
get it
yeah.
fixed.
Yeah. And your brain is the same way. And so when you wait a really long time and you don't deal with it, you're not being respectful of the greater damage that someone else has sustained. You're just making your damage worse.
And in fact, I would be angry if I was a person with no arm and you had a perfectly good arm and you left it broken for a long time right. instead of going to get repaired. Like, what the hell are you doing, man? Go get that shit fixed. Go see the doc. Go see the corpsman. See
exactly.
somebody.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly
right. I mean, it is a tough thing to go through and we make a little bit of light of it, but it's a no-brainer, really, whenever you go down there. And the broken arm example is so good. Like, that's what no one feels like you are tough. If you need a root canal and you say, you know what, I'm going to wait it out a couple of weeks. I'm going to go exercise a little bit and I'm going to start eating better and see if that really knocks out this old root canal that I need, that my infected nerve. But that's what going to therapy is. It's like going to see a brain dentist. Don't wait until you need all of your teeth extracted. Just go get a filling.
It's also why in the book, you know, I spend basically the third act of the book really just bringing the reader in to my therapy sessions, like to the point of including my therapist's notes, which I went and got my VA records and I have my therapist's notes, because I want therapy to feel accessible to the reader. I don't want it to be intimidating. And I want people to be able to see that, like, oh, this is a thing you can do. And I want people to understand why it is that it helps. So by taking people through that evolution, I just believe I can make it a lot more accessible to people.
Yeah, and I think that you have done that. I really enjoyed reading through the book. Full disclosure, I read it while I was in the bathtub a couple times. It helps
right.
me. That is like my neat reading corner. Nobody comes in there and messes with me when I'm taking a bath, and I'm relaxed and I'm like tucked in my little spot. I love it. So if you are in the mood for a bath and you're in for a good book while you're doing it, take a bath with Jason Kander by buying The Invisible Storm, a soldier's memoir of politics and PTSD. Jason, I'm so excited to talk to you and can't wait to see what you do next, my friend.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate this. Thank you.
All right, let's move into Save Rounds and Alibis, which today is presented by our good friends at Cross Country Mortgage. We've known for having opinion here, and we're usually spot on, whether we're talking about who the hottest folks are, what the best boots in the business are, what you should do if somebody gets car bombed and they're a bad person. We always have the right take about that kind of thing. But we always have the correct take when it comes to where you can get your home buying business information from. In fact, for some, it could be the perfect time for you to buy a house, no matter what the news is saying. Even though the interest rates are higher, sometimes you can get a better deal. You need to talk to a professional to make sure that you're getting the right advice, not from Becky down the street or Rob up the road. You need to go to CCM, because CCM listens and understands and communicates throughout the entire loan process. They're going to provide you more loan options that are tailored to your financial capabilities. Their innovative technology focus on what's important to fulfill your loan needs. There are faster closing times in the competition, which is great, especially for our military members. If you're going out and you're buying a new house, you have to be at your base. You want to make sure that sometimes you could do that in 30 days. It's not like you have the 90, 60 days lead time like a lot of other folks do. You need to do this fast, and that's what Cross Country Mortgage specializes in, not just doing it fast, but doing correctly, because slow is smooth and smooth is fast, and Cross Country is the smoothest and fastest in the biz. Go to crosscountrymortgage.com or ccm.com/barstool right now to make sure that you can get this kind of deal. Cross Country Mortgage LLC, NMLS 3029. All loans are subject to underwriting approval. www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org. I don't know how the Micro Machine guy does it so fast. That's about as fast as I could talk right there. I want to do it like the Micro Machine guy. Cannot do it.
It's hard.
Yeah. He was excellent in Saved by the Bell.
Was he? What character was he in Saved by the Bell?
He played one of the teachers in one of the episodes.
Oh
yeah. Was it the one where the duck Becky gets all covered in oil?
Man. I don't know why you brought that up.
Oh my god, that's such a dramatic episode.
Yeah, we pollution, probably needed a trigger warning there.
It's no joke.
It really isn't. It really isn't. What also is no joke is that fucking picture that you sent us, Kate. Would you like to explain yourself?
Oh man. So today, this morning, I was on my way. If you're listening to this Monday, I was flying back. Pat, my baby dad's family lives in Knoxville, so we went out to visit them with them. My baby dad, went out to visit his family out in Knoxville this weekend, and Pat stayed behind to help his parents with some stuff. So today was my first time flying by myself with the baby, and the flight, it's Allegiant Airlines, has this flight that leaves. Like, goes to Knoxville Friday and comes back super early Monday morning. So that's what
I'm really surprised you guys had issue on Allegiant. Usually they're fantastic.
Are you joking? Is that like the spirit? Yeah.
Very
like
much spirit. Joking. Yes. Yeah.
If you don't know, it's very Spirit Airlines, Babadook vibes. There's no TV. It's like the seats don't recline. There's no TV. It's like they don't give.
It's basically like, hey, we're flying somewhere, and that's all you're getting. The little guy from Tales of
the Crypt is like the flight attendant. He's like, would you like a water or a Bischoff cookie?
Yeah. No, they don't give you any food or drink. Nothing. Yeah. You don't see the attendants the entire flight.
Can I have a pretzel? Fuck you, bitch. No.
Bitch. Yeah. So that's very much the vibe. Okay. The baby is up. So our flight was at 7 a.m. And you know me, I'm already not a morning person, whatever.
You are way more than you used to be, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. But the baby is up all night long last night. He is like screaming in pain, and I can't figure it out. I'm like, does he have a bad rash? No. Is he pulling on his ears? Is it an ear infection? No. Like he doesn't have a fever, and he was up literally all night long.
Why didn't he just tell you what was wrong?
I know. I'm like, buddy, oh my gosh, I wish I could help you. I don't know. And I'm like trying to get, he's like not eating, whatever.
Really,
but we have this flight, and I'm like, fuck, like he doesn't have a fever. So it's nothing viral, I guess. So like we have to get home. So I take him on the plane. We get on the plane. It was a rough flight. And like, you feel bad for the people around you, but like, also you're a human being who has to live and travel with your kid. Like, you know what I mean? Like you could only feel so bad because.
And whatever. Like it was an enjoyable experience for you.
Yeah, it was definitely not. And we finally land, and I'm like, oh, thank God. I wait for everyone else to get off the plane because we were such a mess. Like I had, you know, you have a bunch of bags, and then I had a stroller, and I'm by myself, and I get him, but we make it. We finally make it to the car. We finally get home, and I'm like, oh, thank God. Thank God we made it. I go to pick him up out of the car, and I had handed him back his water sippy cup. And I'm like, oh, he must have spilled the water all over himself. It's all wet. And I get to the elevator of the building, and we start going up, and I'm like, oh, God. Oh, God, that's poop. Oh, no, that's poop. I look. The poop had gone completely soaked through. He was wearing thick sweatpants down into his socks, into his shoes, There was poop everywhere. I look at my shirt. It's soaked in poop water. My arm is soaked. My other
we
hand.
We call that diarrhea in the biz.
I'm covered in diarrhea. Both of us are covered in diarrhea. And like him, the brown, like actual shit part had made it out the bottom of his pants. And we were covered in shit. So I get to my door. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. I set him down for 1 second to get through the door. And I take off my hippie pack with my phone in it and the keys. I set it on the stroller. I push the stroller in the door. I turn around and Mr. Poopy Guy, my son, starts running down the hall. I'm like, oh, no, 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 no. So I lurch to go get him. The door shuts.
Locks.
It locks.
Ugh.
And my keys and my cell phone were on the stroller that I had just pushed through the door. So now my son and I, it's early in the morning here. My son and I are covered in shit. We are locked out and Pat is not here.
And can I pause you for a second? And please remember where you're at. Pat's not here. Because if you're like me, you kind of know what your mental makeup is as a parent. Mm-hmm. And you can almost feel like your fuel, I guess your parental fuel meter going down, 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 down. And you can kind of time it like you're driving on a road trip where like, all right, I need to get in. I'm just below an eighth of a tank. I got to do it now. You're walking in your door. And then it's like you missed your exit and you got to turn around and go 20 more miles.
What a great analogy.
That's honestly a great. And when you're like visiting your in-laws or your other fit, like the baby's not in a familiar spot, like it's exhausting. Like it's great to see family and to travel, but traveling with a kid that is like just fucking drains you, dude. It's like so much work and like the logistics of the packing and the like whatever. So we are covered in shit. Like, genuinely, and it smells so fucking bad that I normally don't gag. I love fart stuff. I'm like, oh, farted thing. No, it was so bad I was like gagging. I don't know what to do. I stay calm. I'm like, okay. I knock on our neighbor's door. She comes to the door. She's this sweet little old woman still in her pajamas and her slippers, and she was like, hello, how can I help you? I was like, I live next door, we locked ourselves out. And she's like, well, come in for a second. I was like, well, we can't because we're covered in poop. Okay. And she's like, what? And I was like, we're covered in poop. And she's like, well, what can I do? And I was like, honestly, I don't know. I don't know why I knocked on your door. And she was like, okay. She wants to give me her phone to, I was like, well, maybe I can email Pat because I don't know his number off the top of my head.
Right.
Like, I don't.
Yeah, true.
And she was like, well, you can email him. I was like, both of my hands are covered in poopy. I can't touch your phone.
Did you say poopy? Please tell me you didn't say poopy.
I said poopy. She was an angel. She fills a little bowl. She's like, our dog just died. She starts telling me about how their dog just died a few weeks ago. And I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry.
But you also don't have the mental like faculties at that moment to be sympathetic. Dude, like, I'm covered in shit, lady.
I'm waiting for her to help me email Pat. And she starts telling me about this. I'm like, oh, no. So then she gets this little, I think it was the dog's old bowl, fills it with cheese snacks and kind of pushes it out for Cash to eat.
She gets mad that he's not lapping it like up with his tongue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, but she was like, at least use this to, because he was upset at this point. He's had a long day. Now he's covered in shit and he's freaking out. So she gives him cheesy snacks, which thank God, like, saved the day. But then I was like, I email Pat, but there's no way Pat's up to see this. Like, there's no whatever. And then I remember downstairs in the lobby where like the pizza guys can dial up your thing and call you. So I go, I'm covered in shit. I'm holding, because if that door shuts, I'm locked out of the whole building.
Oh, yeah.
I'm using edge of my toes to reach the thing to call Pat. He answers and he's like, hello, because he just thinks like, why is the delivery person calling me?
Right.
You have like 5 seconds to say something. I'm like, it's Kate. I'm covered in poopy. You have to call the cat sitter right now. And blah, 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 blah. I had to call him like 5 times to get my message across on the loudspeaker. We had a baby. It's a boy. He, thank God, calls our cat sitter, who had our spare keys while we were gone. Who
is this, the wonderful cat sitter who's like
wonderful,
loves it? Yeah.
Who like makes magnets of us for of our cat's face and like they're on the fridge when we get home. It's like a delight. And thank God I had to wait for a hot minute, but thank God she was able to swing by. But so Cash and I are in the lobby, literally covered in shit, just watching my neighbors walk to and from as we're covered in poop and we smell like poop and people are coming to and from. And I'm like at the end of my fucking, like, I just haven't slept in like maybe 3 days.
And you could be a little socially awkward in situations, yes, just in, yes, general. Like when, yes, when you feel like people are looking at you when you don't want them to, kind of situation.
Yeah.
Having, being covered in diarrhea water,
That's one of those moments, I would say.
But I will say, like, certain things the Marines prepare you for, and being covered in poopy is one of them. I didn't feel like I was going to cry for
a second. So we're just going to keep calling it poopy, I guess, huh?
Poopy. Yeah. I just said, we're going to figure it out. I didn't feel panicked. My heart didn't start skipping, but it was like a fuck me. God damn it. Fuck me.
Everybody has those moments where you slowed your brain down.
I liked that because you had to improvise,
adapt, and overcome. And you needed a solution, and you came up with one in the moment.
Yes.
Call Pat, use all these different technologies that I have, and we'll figure this out. You did it. You Semper Gumby'd and got your son out of diarrhea clothes. Well done, Kate.
Yeah, thank you. Check out my Twitter if you want to see a photo of the diarrhea clothes.
Yeah.
You don't. So wait, thanks. I'm not going to disclose where you live, but you don't have like a maintenance guy that can open your door?
Oh, no.
I guess not.
I'm not in that kind of building.
Okay.
Like a real shithole cons. No, there is a guy, but they don't have a master key or anything. There's nothing he could have done. I would have had to wait for a locksmith.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's do something a little different. We're going to do our after action report. Before we really start, I want to say, look, I could take constructive criticism. I could take all those things. And I'm going to say something right now. I feel like I need to. I was an integrity violator in the draft. I absolutely was. I will put myself on Firewatch because I did it. Whenever I started off the introduction of the topic, I said there would be no kink shaming. Whatever gets you going. Into round two, I had shamed Kate for what gets her going repeatedly. And that's not who I want to be as a person. If a toy gets you going from Team America, that's fine. If it's Bill Murray, that's fine. Who am I to judge? So Kate,
thank you.
I owe you an apology. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Yeah, I do have a weird taste in what gets me going. Okay. Yeah,
I mean, we should have known. Sorry. You have a baby with the beef.
He had a mullet and a Coke now when we hooked up. So
yeah, that's all you need. All right, Cons. I know you want to talk. Here you go. Floor is yours, my friend. Cons was the first winner of the draft. The very first, even with the integrity violation and being suspended for third round, he won. Cons, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. I mean, it was a very clear win, too. It wasn't like I eked it out. One of the things I think we need to change, we need to get rid of the names to see, so everyone can see.
That change has already been implemented. Right. We have Nick as the commissioner in the league. He said that that's going to be a change that he has next week. This week, the graphic will not have the names on it.
Yeah, I think that was important because I think I won in despite of that, because I do think people would probably vote for you guys over me just because they don't like me. So that would only hinder me in the future. So that'll be great going forward. Number two, we need to remember not to say other potential guesses before it is your turn.
Fine. Yes.
She already acknowledged that, Cons. Yep. We don't need to beat that. She's had a lot to deal with today with the poop incidents. And let's just keep it easy on Kate today.
I'm on
really? Like, okay.
Every single person listening to this show would choose a broken finger over being covered in diarrhea by somebody else's diarrhea.
I don't think so. I do.
Let's put that on the poll. Nick, for one of the graphics, we got to put that out. Would you rather break your finger or be covered in diarrhea water? Like that?
Got it.
Yeah, because you clean the diarrhea and then you're good. I got to deal with this, I don't know, for a week to 2 weeks.
Diarrhea water touches everything. I'm going around the apartment now. I'm like, do I smell poop again? It just gets everywhere, dude. Your whole world becomes
poop. I'd be interested to hear what everybody thinks.
And as a show that constantly talks about the unseen wounds, Con, pretty offensive that you would say that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, guess what? Seen wounds are important too.
True.
No, but overall, I thought it was great. I thought it was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to seeing what other topics we come up with. We have an endless supply, and it'll be military, some not military. Like this first one, kind of quasi was military, but I'm excited for whatever the future.
Well, why don't we do
this?
If you want to see a specific topic that's military related instead of just like hotness and things like that, if you have one that you want us to see us do a draft, go to.
Yeah.
Last Thursday's episode, the previous draft one, put in some comments there about what you want us to draft, what topics you want to draft, and we'll take some of those and put them away, and we'll have those. Other than that, I thought it was a good time. We're going to do it again this Thursday. We don't know what the topic is going to be yet, but we'll figure that out soon. Nick, my friend, do you have any save rounds?
Yeah, my save round is related to the draft. Just listen, if you see any of these three violate anything over the course of the next few days, anytime if you see something in the past that happened, I will retroactively accept violations at this point. I'm going to be forcing. So you can hit me up at Nikki the Good on Twitter and DM me. Don't put it to ZBT because I don't want them seeing who's the violator, because then that would be a violation. again.
True. Yeah.
So anyway, yeah.
Dude,
so
people are going to be coming through our Twitter from like 2016 looking for violations. Yeah.
I'm fine with it.
Oh, there's a lot. There's
I'll
a lot.
With it. I'll find
yeah, because I think that the statute of limitations, should we have a statute of limitations on this?
Why don't we say a year?
Oh no, I think we go back way further than that. Let's do the same one. Let's do the same one as like grand larceny. Let's do 7 years.
All right, 7 years.
Inside my employment at Barstool. So since July 31st of 2016.
Great. Okay. Alrighty then. Great. I love that. Yeah. So reach out to me.
They dig up horrible things we've tweeted and we lose our jobs. That's a super cool idea. Sick idea.
But if we get canceled, we could probably start like a Patreon or something and make some good ass money. That would be awesome.
A little paywall.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Con, did he save rounds?
No, I'm really curious. What is your guys' method to stay awake when you're driving at night if you feel yourself dozing off?
I like to put on songs that my mom used to clean to in the 80s. So like Chicago and Boston and things like that. And sing with the window cracked about one quarter of the way and sing at the top of my lungs.
Mm-hmm. Kate, do you have a method?
I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't hear the question.
How do you stay awake? How do you stay awake on a long road trip?
Adderall.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You did do that when you went to Indiana, right?
Somebody, I had never taken it before, and somebody handed me two Adderall. And I thought, oh, I guess I'd take them now. And I didn't realize that a quarter of one Adderall would have got me buzzing. And instead, I took two at once. I don't think I stopped once the entire way. I chewed gum. I chewed like an entire pack of gum. I couldn't eat food.
The fuck out of it. Yeah.
I couldn't eat food the whole weekend. I was driving so fast. I remember slamming my foot to the beat of a rap song on the gas pedal as I went over the mountains of the Poconos. And I made it to Indiana in like 2 seconds flat. It was a hoot.
When my PCM put me on Adderall for the first time, I had been working at Barstool for about a year and a half. The first day I took it, I wrote 17 blogs. One day.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was just like,
I thought
like every 2 seconds.
Another time, I always have trouble focusing. I probably should figure something out because I probably do have ADD. But somebody gave me a half of one and was like, here, this should help you like focus at work. Nope. I stood on the corner outside the office and smoked like 15 cigarettes.
Was that Ron Weasley day? Or no?
Oh, I wish that was the day. I would have caught up to him.
I just chew sunflower seeds and spit them in a bottle. So all not right. as sophisticated as you guys.
Oh, that's a good answer, though. Yeah. That's a good idea.
But that's all I got.
Catherine?
No, the poop thing, traveling. I will say, like, I feel like the military does make you mentally tough in some ways. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of people traveling with your kids and blah, 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 and like whatever. And I just have this kind of dead inside, even keel way now about me where I'm like, well, this is what's happening now. All right. So hell yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
Shout out to the military.
Yeah, shout out to the military. Thank you for that. And other than that, I don't think I have anything right now. No.
All right, I'm gonna give my save rounds. First up, I'm giving a shout out to the United States Military Academy. Shout out to West Point, because a new report came out today that of all the different military academies that are in the United States that fall underneath the DOD, Army had the lowest percentage of dropped application. This year, the Naval Academy had 20% less applications than they do in the past. The Air Force Academy, 28%, and West Point only had 10% fewer. So whatever they're doing at West Point to try to get you go there, they did a good job. So shout out to them. Secondly, airport thing. I told you I had to go down to my mom's for my stepdad's funeral. Beautiful, by the way. And it was a great illustration of why the military is one of the best fraternities or sororities, whatever way you want to word it. It's one of the best institutions to be a part of because people are going to care about you. I have two examples of that this weekend. One being that people that my stepdad hadn't seen or talked to in almost 30 years since he was a part of the Blue Angels crew members came to his funeral, hadn't spoken to him or anything. They found out that he had brain cancer and that he passed away. They drove down sometimes hours to come and make sure that he had representation from the Blue Angels there. Secondly, there was another guy that I know from Jacksonville area who put out a different call to action because there was another Navy member who had brain cancer as well, passed away and didn't have any family members that were alive or any close friends. So they had a bunch of active duty Navy and Marines that showed up to his funeral and dressed uniforms and things like that to give him respect. That is what makes this organization such a great thing to be a part of, because you always have a little bit of support system. Veterans all the time feel a little bit isolated after you get out. That's just the feeling. The fact of the matter is there are people who love you and support you and want to be there simply for the fact that you signed on the dotted line one day. Now, I got to get into something else because I went through all these records. I told you guys I was excited about going through all the different vinyls. Yeah. I went before I went down. I went on Amazon and got like a little carrying case to bring on. As it held up to 70 different records. I brought home like 65 or something like that. One, I did not figure out how heavy these motherfuckers were going to be carrying them around the airport. My bag ended up, I weighed it when I got home. I told you guys 65 pounds when I was at the airport. Turns out it was 93 pounds, bag that I had full of them, because some of them were like the 800 grams, and some of these records actually had like four or five records inside.
Oh, dude, like that records is heavy, dude.
And it had the strap that looked like a seatbelt that didn't have any pad. So I had that, and I had my garment bag, and I had a regular carry-on that I was carrying all through the airport.
Like, dude, looking at you, if I didn't know you, with your beard and your glasses and like your kind of funky clothing style, if I was security, I'm like, oh, this fucking guy with like a million records, hipster weirdo head ass. Like,
I felt like such a nerd too. When the TSA agent was like, what's in this? It's heavy as hell. Like going through the little conveyor belt. Cause they're not used to that heavy of carry-ons. Usually those heavy is going to be, you have to pay more for it to be underneath the plane. So they were like, what's in here? I was like, records. It's just a bunch of vinyls. My stepdaddy recently died, like had to explain the story. And they're like, okay, you could bring them through, because they were going to make me check them. But I didn't want them to get ruined. So I brought them through. The military and toughness of mindset. I got to be honest, because one of my connections in Houston, I had to go almost all the way across the Houston International Airport, George Bush Airport. And walking that far with that heavy on just a single strap, there was some big trash cans, and I honestly, God, like it was going through my mind, just fucking dump these, dude. So like, you don't need these. You know, you're not going to want these. But I was like, I could do this. So by the end, I'm holding this thing, walking like it's a fucking football. And I got in trouble at practice for having too many fumbles by the time I get there. And you guys know, me and Cons are sweaty, sweaty motherfuckers. By the time I get to my next gate, I look like I had just run a marathon.
Yeah, it's, and then you got to sit on a plane all sweaty. Gross. Oh, it's the worst.
And that was the fight that I was sweaty as shit when the fight was about to happen. So I was already like ready to go. I had already like loosened up like Patty the Batty in the room, had my hands wrapped and all that shit. It was quite a time, but I got him back here. And let me just say, totally worth it. The first record I listened to was Phil Collins. It starts out with In the Air Tonight.
Wow.
Totally worth it. Totally got that. Some Whitney Houston's. The dude had like 50 Elvis records. It was fun going through that and seeing my mom was great. I love her. Yeah. And surprise, I did it. I cried once. One big cry. My Nana that I hadn't seen since my real dad had a stroke in the year that McCartney is born. My Nana lives in West Virginia and is always traveling around and stuff. I was going out to go. I had to go run to the store real quick. And I looked to the left and I was like, oh, that looks like my Nana. And I looked again and it was her. She hadn't told anybody that she was coming. She had recently had a heart attack and had a surgery to put a stent in and had really bad COVID for a while. So we didn't think she was going to be able to make it. Soon as I saw her, floodgates. I was like, my Nana. Oh, my God. It was like one of those moments. So it was, even though through tragedy, some great things happened. Being around my mom again was awesome, and seeing my grandma and hanging out with my nieces and nephews was great too. So it was, even though it was an awful situation of have to go down there, it was nice to be able to spend some time with them. So I had a good time. That's it. It's on their trip.